Today is Monday the 19th of July 2010. I am Jodie Witcher, W-I-T-C-H-E-R, and this is
Alex Sawutkin, S-A-O-U-T-K-I-N.
And we are interviewing, could you tell me your name please?
Sheila McCulloch, M-C-C-U-L-L-O-C-H.
Thank you. We are at 20 Eastry House, Hartington Road, SW828U. We are part of a project called Grandchildren of the Blitz. Could you tell me your date of birth and place of birth, please?
I was born on the 24th of August, 1938, in a hospital called the York Road Lying In Hospital, which used to be opposite St Thomas's, but is no longer there.
Could you tell us a bit of what you like doing in like the Blitz?
In the Blitz? You don't realise all that much when you're a child, obviously, because it's the grown-ups who are having to bear with it, but you always lived with the fact that you might get bombed. You had a shelter that you built in the garden, halfway down into the ground. It was called an Anderson shelter, and it was covered with earth. We actually grew tomato plants on top of it. And it was difficult because going to school, if the siren went, that meant there was an aircraft raid. If you weren't near a shelter, which had been built by the government, if you weren't near a shelter, the only sensible thing you heard is siren go, and you fell flat on your face as far down as you could get onto the pavement. Mum was taking me to school. And that would happen. And she hated it because we had to have coupons to buy clothes during the war. And it was very difficult. If you wanted a dress, you had to save up your coupons. Stockings, we didn't have tights. They hadn't been invented. Stockings. I think they might have been one coupon, I don't really remember. But, you know, when Mum threw herself down on the floor, ruined her stockings, that was one coupon. And that was pretty dramatic for her, because where's your next stockings coming from? You haven't got any more coupons.
You mentioned the Anderson shelters. Could you tell us a little bit about how you felt when you was inside the Anderson shelters?
They were horrible. They went halfway into the ground, not completely, in your back garden. We were lucky to have a back garden. Pardon me. It was dome-shaped at the top, dug into the ground, and it had some bunks each side, you know, for people to sleep. And then once they dug it into the ground, earth was put over the top. That's why we could have the tomato plants. But of course, it smelled dank and earthy and not all that nice. And not only dank, it was damp as well. Not a lot of fun, and you came out of it, when the air raid sounded, you came out of the house and you went down into this thing, and then you probably stayed all night. My mum and dad used to put me to bed down there every night, raid or no raid, so I was already there, protected. Now, it wasn't all that much fun, really. And the people upstairs had a little Scotty dog. It was a really sweet little thing. And that, of course, had to come down with us, you know, that they weren't going to come down without the Scotty. So there's my mum and dad and me and the two people upstairs with their dog. So you've got quite a few people in a very small space. And, of course, you've got no lighting. You've got to bring down a gas light or a paraffin lamp or whatever, or candles if you had to. No. It wasn't all that much fun. But it was safer than getting blown off the face of the earth.
Was there any cases when you weren't in the Anderson shelter or in any shelter?
Well, yes, but even if you were, it didn't guarantee anything. We had one raid, almost a direct hit. The lady next door, I'm sorry to say, lost her life. The lady who lived above us, she lost an eye. And you wouldn't have heard about this probably, but behind our gardens, there was what used to be called a workhouse. It was a place where you went when you retired. They didn't have old people's homes as such. It's a place you went when you retired, literally. The last place anybody ever wanted to go into was workhouse. It was Victorian. But it had been picked by the local authorities to try and save it, obviously, if there was going to be a bombing. And it was surrounded with sandbags, great big sacks of sand to try and stop the blast of the bombs. Well, that was good in theory, but it didn't work really in practice. When the bombs dropped straight down on us, all the sandbags burst, which wasn't really much fun because they came and covered our Anderson and we had to be dug out, literally from loads and loads and loads of sand and earth. And we were dug out, and luckily we weren't hurt. But the one thing that I do remember, and I was only a small child, remember. No, not as grown up as you, or as sensible. My doll's pram had got smashed, really smashed. And this gentleman who had helped dig me out, I don't know where he was from. He could have been from one of the local services. He could have been a soldier, I don't know. But he was wearing a uniform. And there's me crying about my doll's pram. My mother and father haven't got a house. You know, the furniture's ruined. We've got nothing. And there's me going on about my doll's pram. And he did say to me, well, I'll get it fixed. Which, of course, looking at it, was completely, utterly impossible. And I remember saying to him, well, it's black, but could you have it painted green? I mean, all the stupid things. And for weeks and weeks, I sat around expecting somebody was going to bring me back a green doll's pram. Needless to say, they never did. But at the time, it seemed a good idea, you know. Yeah, I suppose it stopped me. I expect I was a crying, rotten kid, you know. But it stopped me. But that's more or less how it was like. And then they managed to drop a bomb on my birthday. Now, my mum had been saving, once again, coupons. You could only get so much on your rations. She had been saving little bits and pieces of margarine and sugar to make me a birthday cake. Now, you couldn't get icing sugar or anything like that, and she cut out a white circle of white cardboard to go on the top to look like icing, etc. And it was on the table in front of the kitchen window. My birthday party. A couple of people were coming. don't remember who, Siren went, we all disappeared down the Anderson shelter. When we came back, all the windows had gone, and the kitchen window had gone straight onto my birthday cake, and so all the slivers of glass in it. Well, you couldn't eat it because you didn't know where the next bit of glass was coming from. And it'd taken months to save that stuff. Oh, she wasn't happy. Well, that's about all I can say about Andersons. They did come in useful.
So, how did you get the coupons?
Oh, well, they were issued by the government and everybody got the same amount. You had coupons for everything, for clothing and for food. Some things were exempt. There were certain things in the food line that you could get that weren't on ration, as we called it. But clothing, you had so many points, they called them. I can't remember the exact amounts, but let's say you've been given 40 points for the year, and a coat is going to cost you 10. So you've got 13 left. So you've got 30 points left. Probably shoes will cost 5. Skirt would be 4. Jumper, you know, that kind of thing. Once you've got through the 40, right, you've had it. You've had it, kid. That's your lot. You can't really be bothered about fashion because if you haven't got any coupons, you can't buy anything. Which wasn't all that funny. But certain things for food weren't on coupons. Some were. Meat was. Meat was very hard to come by because you only got half a chop or something like that, or 2 sausages. But funnily enough, it transpires that although it sounded draconian, that was a healthier diet than we've got now. We didn't have fat people living off takeaways. I'm not saying that everybody should have to live on wartime rations by any means, but and of course things were so different in as much as I asked my mother once, what does a banana taste like? I mean, I'd seen pictures of a banana, and I knew it was a fruit. But how would you describe a banana? How would you say it tastes like? Quite. Yeah, I mean, my mother said, oh, she'd had them before the war. Mum, what does a banana taste like? Well, I mean, it tastes like a banana. You can't tell anybody that. And then at the very end of the war, I had to go into hospital for tonsillitis, had my tonsils removed. And my mum and dad brought me 1/4 pound of grapes. Now, does 1/4 pound mean anything to you nowadays? 125 grams of grapes. Well, what can I say? It would have been about 90 pence. But they were only earning £5 a week. My dad was earning £8, actually, because he was in a good job. Can you imagine earning £8 a week? You can't, can you? I mean, my pocket money even after the war we're talking about now, my pocket money when I was 11 and 12 was the old sixpence, which would be 2.5 pence today. End of message. Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous, really, but that's all we had. And of course, at that stage, we hadn't got mobiles and all this television and all the stuff that goes with it. We were primitive, really. Most people didn't have a television. 9 people out of 10 didn't have a car. And as for bathrooms, well, I mean, this is ludicrous. We didn't have a bathroom when I was small, before we got bombed out the first time. My mum and dad had 2 rooms and what we call a scullery, a bit worse than a kitchen, on the ground floor. The other 2 people had 3 rooms on the top floor. There's no bathroom. And the toilet was out in the garden. And in this scullery thing, we had a great big bath. Ordinary bath, but it was a metal bath, hung on a hook. And once a week you got it down. Then you had to boil up water in a copper and jug it into the bath. So you didn't have a bath each. The cleanest one, which was usually me, got in first, then Mum had to go, then Dad came last. I mean, that's how it had to be. In fact, you're dead lucky now, when you think about it. I mean, it's natural to you, isn't it, just to have a shower or a bathroom? You think you're out, somebody without the tiny mind, if they came and said to you, well, I'm terribly sorry, but the only toilet's out in the garden. Or would you? What would you think? Lost for words. Yeah. I imagine it seems to you that such a time couldn't exist. It's not that long ago. Sorry, did you want to say something? Sorry.
That's fine, you can carry on.
Oh, no. Well, sure, you've got something else to ask. I'm bleating away here like...
Okay, so could you tell me a little bit about what you had to give up for the war?
Everything. Practically. Everything. We've already established we're rationed on food and we're rationed on clothes. There was no street lighting for a start because that might guide enemy bombers. So it's blacked out completely, which is fine now, but not so funny in November. So you had to give that up. Of course, you had to give up family life apart from anything else. Most of the men under a certain age, and I can't remember what it was, most of the men under a certain age were called up and were in the services. So you've got mothers left here with the children on their own. And the service pay was abysmal. It really was. I mean, it was hard going for those women. I mean, I was dead lucky in that my father was in what they called a reserved occupation. That was, in other words, a job that was contributing towards the war effort and was needed. So my father never did go off. But if you had a father that had gone off, then Mum's got to bear the whole business, bringing up the children. Small amount of money, never knowing one day to the next whether she and the children would get bombed or whether she'd get a nice written telegram from the government saying, terribly sorry to tell you your husband's dead. I mean, I think that's enough to give up, really. You gave up your freedom. But we were fighting for freedom because we'd seen France, Belgium, Holland, Czechoslovakia, Poland all go under the Germans. and we were about all that was left. 20 miles of channel between Calais and Dover. Probably we couldn't have been any worse off than we are now, because we seem to have gone completely and utterly doonally now. But I don't know. I felt quite proud of being English at that stage. I don't now. You can't see me.
Yeah, I'm fine, thank you. So can I ask, sort of more on a sort of like a personal level, like as a child, like how did it sort of affect you as, your feelings as a child, the whole experience of the war?
I got sent off to some friends in Bedfordshire, and being an only child, I suppose, or probably highly strung or whatever, I was there for about, it seemed years, but it was probably only about 12 weeks or so. I just could not stand being away from my parents, and I developed some righteous dance, great. Still, never mind. Live through it. But you don't really remember all that much. You remember highlights.
Have you got anything that you do remember, any stories or anything that you could?
Well, I remember first time, going down to the seaside just after the war. Where you go down with your back in spade, etc. Miles and miles and miles of barbed wire. Why they thought that would keep back a German invasion, I do not know. But, and of course, some of the beaches were mined. So we went down there, and I can remember my mum and dad saying, "That's the sea." But we weren't allowed to go anywhere near. It's okay. It's the air freshener, it does that. That's the sea, but we can't go anywhere near it because there's still still mines there and still barbed wire. And, one noticed every day, of course, when you went to school, with your gas mask, of course. And you always got your little gas mask. I had a Mickey Mouse one, they were nice. And I had that for years, and I don't know, I must have been at least 30. A firm I was working for, we'd been talking about it. I said, "I'll bring my Mickey Mouse gas mask in," which I did, and somebody swiped it. I thought, well, that was a bit off, But they were horrible things. Possibly it's just me, but I do not like being enclosed like that. Whether it's Mickey Mouse with a funny little flap or not. Apart from that, of course, I wasn't all that old at the time, and really don't remember. Having been born into a war, I was a year old when the war started. But having been born into a war, you don't know any different. You just accept the fact, you don't even think about it. This is life. Here I am. Here I'm growing up. Mum says I mustn't go over there because there's an unexploded bomb. We mustn't forget Fanny Faraday. Oh, she was a great favourite. Remember these big air balloons they used to have? Big silver things with, I think, 3 ears. They had them in various places in London, theoretically to stop low-flying planes getting through. They never would have done. But we had one in the little square, little green square, on my way to school. Because I went to school Merrow Street, just behind Walker Road. And I lived in Faraday Street, which is no longer. We used to have a huge water tank there in case of incendiary bombs. so that the fire brigade or the local ARP could get to it. But I mean, old Fanny Faraday, because I lived in Faraday Street, you've got to give a name to everything. This great big silver balloon was anchored halfway to my school. So we called her Fanny Faraday. And well, you got by, that's all I can say. I do appreciate that our parents must have gone through hell. I was too young to appreciate the fact that I was going through anything else but normal, because I'd never known anything else.
So what about the local community?
The local community, as the same as today, I like me, who's your second choice? There was no community spirit to talk of. There never has been. And if your home got bombed, not literally to the ground, but if it got bombed and was still standing with bits in it, you'd be looted. Let's have no consideration about the fact that people were sweet and decent to one another. Some were, of course they were. You always get some being decent. But, there was looting and the black market making a penny wherever they could out of people that couldn't afford it, really. I mean, when I say rationing, you could get anything you wanted, providing you got the money. But which of us working class have got the money? I mean, I think Dad was on about 6-7 quid a week. And our rent was 10 shillings.
So, were you ever a victim of looting, or did you loot yourself?
Well, not looting, but I did. When the sandbags behind the workhouse blew and came over our Anderson, we had to be dug out. We had to be dug out by the there were various people, auxiliary corps and Dad's army, for want of better words, they all came around. And we were dug out from the whole thing, so that was about the only time. I've never actually, I didn't hurt, but on the other hand, the lady next door, as I say, she was hurt, and the lady upstairs lost her eye. It was just lucky I didn't. So, Right, who's next?
Could you tell us a little bit about your experience of school during the Blitz?
Oh, that was a different thing completely, really. I ended up going to four different schools because either we got bombed, so we had to move house, and we're put in some weird and wonderful places, or the schools got bombed. So during the Blitz, I had at least four different schools. And that's before I was 11. But I must admit, what they had done during the war, they called up all the young men, obviously, and they recalled teachers who'd retired even. And I was dead lucky. I had a couple of teachers who had been retired and come back, and they still worked to the rather old, I was going to say old fashioned, that's not quite true, discipline, whereby no mucking about, you learnt. And they were disciplinarians. Not harsh, but they taught you and they expected you to learn. That's ordinary schools just round the back of New Kent Road, Old Kent Road. They taught me enough that I went to grammar school, which I don't think you've got now. But very few of you went to grammar school. But you could do it. Mind you, as usual, most kids muck around and waste their time. And it's not until you're about 30 that you realise, I wish I hadn't. Right. I can't imagine that's ever going to change, you know. I mean, do you like school? How good are you? What would you think? Do you keep up with it? Are you interested?
I like school because of my friends, but I don't really like doing work.
No, well, in actual fact, then, you don't like school. You've got to work. Sorry, I'm not preaching, but you'll never get anything unless you work at it. I mean, you'll never learn how to cook if you don't. You can make some horrible mistakes. Haven't I just? But you'll never learn how to cook. You'll never learn how to knit, sew, anything. Mind you, I was lucky my mother taught me them all. That's another thing that I've got a big bleat about in this life. Mothers don't bother to teach you anymore. That's even if they know themselves, because probably their mothers haven't taught them. Oh dear. Oh, sorry, mother. And what were you going to say?
I was going to say, I was just
listening. Oh. Could you tell us a bit about what you liked? Like your hobbies and what games you like to play when you're a child?
Yep. What age were we thinking about? We're not necessarily thinking about the wartime. We're thinking about the wartime. Well, I was only about 7 when it ended, so, you know, there wasn't much time. I hated sport. Always hated sport. I like drama, and we had singing classes, I quite like those, but drama I liked, and we had dance as well, but when it came to sport, you know, anything physical, oh, no way. We had netball and we had hockey, and the further I could get back, the better, you know. If you could only get, let's say, 14 people onto the netball, and there's 20 of us, I'd be the first to say, I'll sit out, I don't mind sitting out. And I'm thinking about it later on, actually. I hated tennis. We went, and I hated it. I don't think my tennis racket ever came over its press. More than twice in the whole time I was at school. I still hate it.
Could you tell us a little bit about evacuation?
That was not a very nice scene. My husband got evacuated with a lot of people. You know, it was done en masse. I was lucky. I went to some people we knew, so that was completely different. But he went to through the government, and he went to a place that, honestly, you'd never believe. They literally kept him and a couple of other kids in a chicken coop. They weren't allowed into the house. I don't know what kind of bedding they had. They were barely fed. Everybody got paid so much per evacuee. And I think she had three of them. And they were literally kept in a chicken coop at the end of the garden. And my father-in-law, that's his dad, went down, saw what it was like, and immediately took him away. And yet, on the other hand, there was a young lad that lived behind me in Walworth before we got bombed. He was evacuated to Wales to a farm, and they loved him to bits, and then left the farm to him eventually. Wow, quite. He was good and bad. Some of them really wanted to look after children because the war was on and they hadn't got parents that, you know, were able to look after them at the time. But some of them were just there for, let's bring in the money, keep them in the chicken coop, and we get so much per week per child. Evacuation, going away from everything you know and everybody you know at a very early age, is not the best of ideas. I don't know what would happen nowadays, but if I got a child, you know, if I was younger and I got a child, I think I'd cling on to it, whatever, and not let it go.
Would you have preferred to be evacuated or stay in London?
Well, I was evacuated to friends, but, it didn't agree to me. I'd never been away from my parents. Didn't like the idea. And no, it brought on an illness, a kind of mental illness for a time. I just had to come back. And as my mother said at the time, well, okay, she can but get bombed. She can get bombed here, or she can end up as a mental idiot kind of thing down in Bedfordshire. So I think I've ended up as both. I've got bombed and I'm a mental idiot. Well, it makes a change, doesn't it? Anyway, how are we doing?
For the purpose of the recording, my name is Marigold Hughes. I'm the project coordinator. Sheila, can I ask you, in the long term, how do you feel that your life would have been if the war hadn't happened?
I suppose, had the war not happened, we would have stayed where we were before we were bombed. We'd have probably continued there with the local school. It would have been up to me to see whether I shone or not. And Big Head here did at some stage manage to do a bit better than the others. But whether that would have happened, I don't know. It didn't alter the course of my parents' life, really, because mother was too... had a young child, so was exempt from going to work. And my father had been kept out from the forces. So we were a pretty family kept together. But the whole of the war changed everybody. And when you think about it, our mode of life, even during the 20s and 30s. It's ancient to what goes on now. Manners, things like that. I know this shouldn't come into this particular conversation, but you were proud to be a virgin. And no man wanted to know you to get married unless you were, really. Now look at it. Now it's probably me being old and crabby, but I just do not believe in the loose morals of the And I do think the war, because it let women off the leash, well, which is a horrible word, really, but it did. The men were away, the women were necessarily put into work and suddenly found they got a freedom. And life has never been the same since. I mean, when did you last see a man stand up when you walk into a room?
I don't know. I'm not really conscious of it either.
No.
Yeah.
But I bet they don't. But it was an accepted norm. And even... used to be polite to one another. They're not now. Oh, I could rabbit on for years about that. Yeah. No, it used to be nicer in my time. I don't necessarily mean that, but I do think standards have fallen. Right, come on then.
So could you tell us a bit about your family?
Hmm?
Could you tell us a bit about your family, please?
My family? Well, I haven't got all that much family, actually. I lived with my mum and dad till I got married, and I disgusted my headmistress by getting married at 18. I was still at school, and she called me out amongst the whole assembly to say that I had just ruined my life. I had my mum and dad. Mum was the eldest of 9 children. And so she, of course, she had gone through the First World War as well. So therefore, grandfather's in the war, mother's been called up. My mother was heartily fed up with looking after 8 siblings. So she had me and thought, thank you very much, that's enough. I gather from her that it was a toss-up between me or a grand piano. In retrospect, she'd have done better with a piano, but never mind, you know. My father, I didn't really see that much because he was working 6 in the morning till 6 in the evening. 5 days a week, and 6 to 1 on Saturdays. I mean, it was more or less normal. So you'd only got Saturday afternoon and Sundays. So I very rarely saw him. And there were quite strict regimes then. When I was young, I had to be in bed by 5:30 at latest. And even when I was 10 and 11, 9 o'clock. Even when I met my husband, through the church where we both went, he was 10 years older than me. So he was a grown-up man, thank you. But I had to be, even when we were engaged, I had to be at home by 10 o'clock. No mucking about. I mean, it seems incredible now, but you did. And you wouldn't dare do anything else but. But of course, not having any brothers and sisters. Are you having troubles? Oh. Yeah, you know, not having brothers and sisters.
Try not to breathe through her
face. Oh dear, oh go on, go on.
Breathe.
You'll go pop. No, but apart from that, of course, we didn't have any children. So therefore we haven't got any grandchildren either. And funnily enough, I'm an only child. My husband was an only child. So therefore, I have no family at all. There's only me left. Since my husband died a couple of years ago, there is only me. But we were dead lucky because We really got on well, and it would have been our 50th anniversary 2 weeks after he died. So that was a ruination of a good party, wasn't it? You know, he could have organised it better, but there you go. So really, family wise, I'm a dead loss. There's only me.
So
it's not very nice on Christmas, for example. I mean, everybody else has gone off with their families and, you know, my friends, you know, they've gone down to their families and things. You can bet your bottom dollar Christmas is the 4 days that I won't see or speak to anybody.
So would you have preferred to have any brothers or sisters, or would you have preferred to have any children?
No, I don't think I would. I don't know, because I've never had any, but being the only one, and being the only one from two people who'd be only one, I think you get very selfish. I'm probably very selfish. I try not to be, but I don't think. Well, I don't know what it would be like, that's the thing. Probably I'd find it was great. On the other hand, I don't know. I don't think I would like to, but on the other hand, if I suddenly found I could brothers and sisters, I'd probably think it was the greatest thing since sliced bread. I don't know.
So, what was Christmas like during the war?
Oh, there wasn't one really. Well, you did your best, Well, you got to allow for the fact that you might have to dive into the Anderson at any moment, kind of thing. And all the food was on ration. So if you couldn't really make a Christmas cake. If you wanted to make a Christmas cake, you got to save up your sugar ration for practically the whole year. Which means that you don't get sugar for 11 months. And then in December you can make a cake. Which isn't the brightest thing. But people did enjoy themselves, you know. They got together and danced and laughed and sung as much as you could, kind of thing. And we always made our own paper trains, which I don't suppose you've ever heard of. Strips of paper glued together. They made chains. And we made paper chains. It's amazing what you can do when you've got to. You know, improvise. But then, of course, half the people weren't there. Half of the men, well, most of the men were in the new services.
So, when you said there was none of your family left, how does that make you feel?
Well, I've never had much family to lose, really. I hated losing my mother and father, but I had my husband there, who was always an absolute rock. And he was 10 years older than me, so almost looked after me, kind of thing. Now I feel lonely and isolated. I've got nobody to, you know, I've got no family. And so I've got some friends. Obviously, you've got friends, you know, you speak to those, but they're all my age or older. Most of them are older. And unfortunately, they do keep popping off. I mean, practically every other month, somebody else has died, you know, because of their age. Which was to be expected. It makes you feel lonely most of the time, I suppose. Mm. Well, what's it all about?
Sheila, to go back to where you lived, is it right that it was just off the Walworth Road?
Yes.
Is that where you...
It was Faraday Street, it's now...
So was it completely bombed out, the whole that whole street?
Yes.
Okay.
And in front of it, as I remember, they had a big water tank, a huge thing, as an extra for the fire brigade. You had Westmoreland Road with the workhouse.
Mm.
Then you had Faraday Street with this water tank effort. If you went from Walworth Road up Westmoreland Road, it was just off there.
Okay.
But of course, it's all disappeared now, I imagine. I'm sure it has. Yeah.
Sure. So when the whole street was bombed out, were you did you say you were relocated into
we
the...
We were, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Out of the area completely?
I don't know whether it's out of the area. We tried to get a place in Camberwell, opposite Camberwell Town Hall, practically, which some friends had vacated because they were going to the country, but it was privately owned. And we were turfed out after 3 days. The landlord didn't want us. Then the council got us 2 rooms just off Kennington Park, sharing a bathroom and a toilet in the outside. And then 1947, I think it was, Southwark Council once again rehoused us into a flat in Falmouth Road, which is between the borough and Bricklayers Arms.
Mm.
And Mum and Dad lived there the rest of their life. That's where I got married from.
And when you went back to that area, or when you were, you know, in that area after the war had gone, did you notice in what ways had that community changed as a result of the Blitz happening?
Oh, well, completely and utterly, because everybody, us included, we'd all been moved from pillar to post. We had never lived in Falmouth Road, nor had a lot of other people. Any community spirit there might have been, zilch.
Just because of the transitions and the changes that people had to be put through.
We had come from Walworth, other people had come from other places.
Mm, mm.
Nothing in common.
Mm.
And that was it. Oh dear, oh dear.
Yeah, and I suppose that now that's quite common, isn't it, to change, you know, to change your street or to change your area, and it isn't that big a deal, but I guess at that point things were different.
Before the war, as such, when we were in Faraday Street, people had been there, well, not for centuries, people had been there generation upon generation, kind of thing. Even in this place, which has nothing to do with it, this had always been a place where once children grew up, they got a flat, and then their children got a flat.
Mm.
Well, no more, no.
As a child, how conscious were you of that being a big disruption to your life?
Just
moving out?
No, I didn't, because it was just normal.
Mm.
I doubt very much at that young age whether I could have even told you what a war meant. All I knew was that you dived. When those bloody awful sirens went, you dived. That you knew. Dive for cover, you know, even if it meant flat on the pavement, as I said.
Mm. Interesting. Guys, have you got any more questions that you'd like to ask Sheila before we finish?
No. Can I ask about the teddy bear, please?
Can I ask about the teddy bear?
That is my Ted. Mac, that's my husband. I am a Winnie the Pooh fanatic. There's Winnie the Pooh books, things, you name it. And he's always called me Pooh.
Oh.
And he bought me Ted as one of my wedding presents, and seeing that actually on Thursday he would be 81. Ted's got to be 54.
Oh wow.
Yeah. That's Ted, and I've got Paws in the other room, mainly because he lays flat on his back, and he's made by a company called Pawson. So I said, well, fair enough, you know, Paws, you know, yeah. So I go to bed with Paws every night. Sorry to sound stupid, but I do. Paws okay. goes to bed with me every night. No. Take me away.
No. It's lovely.
Brilliant. Yeah. Thanks so much, Sheila, for your time.
Oh, pleasure.
Thank you. What are you saying, guys?
Thank you for your time.
Oh, thank you, love.
Thank you for letting us speak to you.
Brilliant. Thank you
for
coming.
Bye. Yeah.